c'est correct. Donc, on va passer à la communication suivante. Et un peu en suivant la logique de Alonso de Santa Cruz, on va donc partir de la Méditerranée pour arriver en océan Indien. Et donc, la communication qui suit, c'est celle de M. Pierre Larson. M. Larson est donc professeur à l'Université Johns Hopkins aux États-Unis. Il a fait sa thèse à l'Université de Wisconsin en 1992, célèbre institution pour l'histoire africaine et l'histoire globale, il faut le dire. Il a publié plusieurs livres. Son livre « History and Memory in the Age of Enslavement » était déjà consacré à l'histoire de Madagascar. Et puis, il a publié un livre désormais considéré comme classique, « Ocean of Letters, Language and Creolization in an Indian Ocean Diaspora », publié par Cambridge en 2009. Et donc, aujourd'hui, il va revenir à l'histoire de Madagascar pour nous parler, en fait, du XVIIe siècle, son titre étant « Food, Sex and Law at Fort Dauphin ». Il se peut qu'il va peut-être modifier ce titre en avançant, mais voilà, la parole est à vous.
Thank you very much, Professor, and thank you to everyone for coming. Friends of mine, thank you for being here. The title of my talk is advertised as Food, Sex, and Law at Fort Dauphin. It might better be titled Law, Sex, and Beef at Fort Dauphin. Only a slight modification. For cattle and beef play a key role in the story about food, and they are linked to both sex and the law. But first to the 17th century colony of Fort Dauphin, France's first in the Indian Ocean, and also a contemporary of France's early Atlantic colonies of Nouvelle-France, or Quebec, and the Antilles, or the French Caribbean islands. Fort Dauphin was conceived in the context of France's Atlantic Empire, which preceded it by only some decades. Nouvelle-France, the Antilles, and Fort Dauphin were connected by law issued in the form of company contracts by Cardinal Richelieu King Louis XIII. Unlike Nouvelle-France and the Antilles, however, Fort Dauphin was a colony lost very early. Commenced in 1642, it came to an end 32 years later, in September of 1674, August and September. The short life of Fort Dauphin and historians' penchant for taking the present and studying the history that leads up to it is certainly the reason it is so poorly known. Because the colony disappeared long ago, its history has not seemed of much interest to historians. Fort Dauphin is primarily known by Malgachisons, or scholars of Madagascar, but even scholars of Madagascar know the colony poorly, for there are no good synthetic histories of it. There were some synthetic histories, mainly in the late 19th century. Remedying this problem is part of the purpose of my talk today. I'm also engaged in a history of Fort Dauphin in which law, sex, marriage, and beef are key themes, and which is linked by the history of a family that I trace across the 17th, the 18th, and the early 19th century that connects Fort Dauphin with the Île Mascareigne of the Indian Ocean. In a recent book on Colbert's French East India Company of 1664, historian Marie Ménard Jacob calls Fort Dauphin the prehistory, préhistoire, of the French East India Company. Here I argue that Fort Dauphin was both precursor to, and in many ways fundamental to, the rest of France's Indian Ocean Empire, that of South Asia, but especially that of the Mascarene Islands, and particularly that of Île de Bourbon. Fort Dauphin is not merely a side story. The reason Fort Dauphin is foundational is relatively simple. The laws that the French Crown provided to the colony in southeast Madagascar were modeled on those for Nouvelle-France and the Antilles. In turn, laws that the French Crown issued for Fort-Dauphin and their expression in the actual marriage practices within the colony were carried over to South Asia and most notably to Île de Bourbon. It was in the Indian Ocean that these laws, first designed for the fur trading colony of Nouvelle-France, came to their fullest development and also had their greatest impact, I argue. Especially in the colony of Île de Bourbon. French Empire of the 17th century was a contracted empire. All of France's colonies to 1674 and many thereafter were operated by private investors, private companies, who mobilized capital for trade and colonial settlement under the recognition and protection of the French crown and also in promotion of it. Colonizing companies were, as you all probably know, the method of choice for most European colonial ventures, major exception being the Portuguese Empire. French colonizing companies, especially of the 17th century, were particularly unstable. The crown frequently canceled contracts that it issued. Issue them, cancel them shortly thereafter. And companies also regularly failed. Therefore, new contracts were issued. As a result, about 100 colonizing companies were formed by the French Crown between 1599 and the French Revolution, although most of these were in the 17th century itself and not in the 18th. Within a year of coming to power in 1626 and in charge of France's navigation and commerce at the court of King Louis XIII, Cardinal Richelieu began to shift the nature of the contracts issued to colonizing companies. The French North American colony of Nouvelle-France was at that time had fewer than 100 colonists. The idea, both in Paris and on the part of Samuel de Champlain, was to increase it, to create a pool of settlers. The contract that Cardinal Richelieu granted to the company of the Cent Associés, or the 100 partners, for Nouvelle-France in October 1627 first set out provisions to attract French settlers that were later adopted for emerging French colonies in the Caribbean and in Madagascar of the Indian Ocean. The 1627 contract of the 100 investors for Nouvelle-France permitted only natural French Catholics, naturels français catholiques, to be admitted to the colony. That was Article 2 of the contract. For justice and seigneurie over all of Nouvelle-France and lands and property to be conquered of savages, les sauvages, to be held by the company of 100 associates, so that the company would hold land and property it could conquer or take, Article 4. And for the descendants of French men with, quote, savages brought to the knowledge of the faith and profession of it, to be regarded and reputed as natural-born French, with rights to live in France and to acquire, inherit, and will property. The French read like this. Ordonnera sa majesté que les descendants des Français qui s'habitueront au dit pays, ensemble les sauvages qui seront amenés à la connaissance de la foi et en feront profession, seront censés et réputés naturels français et comme tels pourront venir habiter en France quand bon leur semblera. Et y acquérir, tester et succéder et accepter donations et légats, tout ainsi que les vrais régnicoles et originaires français, sans être tenus de prendre aucune lettre de déclaration ni de naturalité. That was Article 17. These linked provisions, the ones I've just talked about, served related purposes. giving companies ownership of and sovereign power over lands and the property they wrested from native people, created colonies. That's how they were created. Requiring only Catholics to populate the colonies gave much power to Catholic missionaries in those colonies. That was probably the biggest effect. The provision for marriage of French men with native women served to bring those women and their reproductive powers into the French project to increase the population of French colonies. It was notoriously difficult to get French who had security of land tenure to populate the colonies. This provision also classified mixed race or Métis children, or what otherwise would be considered as Métis, classified them as French and as white, complicating the standard European colonial racial schemes. This was the importance, particularly for Île-de-Bourbon later. So these provisions became a boilerplate, a standard set that were used for later contracts. In February 1635, Cardinal Richelieu issued a new colonizing contract to the Sieurs d'Enambuc et de Rosset for colonization of the Antilles d'Amérique, or the French Caribbean islands, that contained these same provisions. The Compagnie Française des Indes Orientales, formed by nine investors and that commenced a colony in Madagascar in 1642, was not the first French company to have a contract for Indian Ocean trade. Between 1600 and 1633, five contracts had been issued to trade companies. These have largely been forgotten. The 1642 company, however, was the first to begin a colony in the Indian Ocean in southeast Madagascar. One of the company's investors, the 1642 company for the Indian Ocean, was a Monsieur Berruyer, who was the principal investor, a principal investor also in the French company that held the royal contract for the colonization of the French Antilles, or the Caribbean islands. So there was a financial organic link between these two. The 1642 company was conceived primarily as a company of trade that would create a colony in Madagascar only as an entrepôt for Asian trade, a sort of French equivalent to Batavia. That was the idea to begin with. Cardinal Richelieu did not issue authorization for marriages between French men and native Malagasy women to this 1642 company, as he had just done for Canada and the Caribbean. However, because the investors of the company and administrators of the colony itself were aware of these provisions in the Atlantic for marriage with native women, they applied them also in Madagascar in the absence of specific authorization or prohibition. Priests of the Congrégation de la Mission, who served the colony, made this decision to celebrate such marriages and sought to baptize Malagasy women who were already engaged in sexual relationships with French men, femmes scandaleuses, the priests called them. These baptized Malagasy women, with the permission of the governor of Fort Dauphin, so you have the missionaries and the governor acting together, were married to French men who had completed their employment contracts with the French East India Company of 1642. Those contracts were typically five-year contracts, so beginning in about 1647, these marriages began. 1648, when the missionaries of the Congrégation de la Mission arrived. The men who had completed their contracts were called Old French, Ancien Français. No ship was ever provided to return them to France, as was stipulated in their contracts. Contracts weren't didn't seem to be worth much at the time. Perhaps that's why so many contracts, the companies, were also issued. So it was these men who were married once their contracts were finished. With their wives, they moved to farms or habitations in the vicinity of Fort Dauphin. So the colony of Fort-Dauphin began to take on a double geographical and probably sociological form, with single French employees at the fort with the so-called femmes scandaleuses, to whom they were not married, on the one hand, and married ex-employees forming habitation around the fort on the other. So there's two dimensions to the colony. These two elements of the colony were organically related. The marriages and the habitation were kind of a rite of passage after employee status was finished. They also came into conflict with each other. Over the 32 years of its existence, from 1642 to 1674, Fort-Dauphin was administered by three separate companies. During its first 12 years, from 1642 to 1654, it was administered by a group of nine investors, who I've already spoken about, who called themselves the Compagnie Française des Indes Orientales, one of whose governors was the famous Étienne de Flacourt. That company sent five ships and about 300 men to Madagascar. For another 11 years after that, between mid-1654 and July 1665, Fort-Dauphin was the private venture of a single investor, the Maréchal de la Meilleraye, who was the governor of Nantes and a wealthy cousin of the Cardinal Richelieu. The Maréchal de la Meilleraye invested very heavily in Madagascar, sending 12 ships and almost 1,000 men from France for the colony. It was, however, a time of war, both with Spain and within France, the Fronde. Only seven of the 12 ships and about 580 men survived the voyage in the first couple weeks in Madagascar. Then, for only about 5 years, from 1665 to 1670, the colony was governed by Jean-Baptiste Colbert's Compagnie Française des Indes Orientales, formed in 1664. This 1664 company sent about 1,600 men as colonists to Madagascar. Fort-Dauphin became a colony of the French crown in 1670, dumped by the company. And during its last 4 years, no new French colonists arrived, or no appreciable number of them. The king was encouraging his colons to leave Madagascar and go elsewhere, especially to Ile de Bourbon. Most of them refused. Over a period of 32 years then, Fort-Dauphin received some 3,000 men and a few women from France. The colony temporarily accommodated, in the later years of its existence, more than 2,500 additional men for shorter periods, as passing sailors, soldiers, employees, merchants of the company and of the king, designed for other parts of the Indian Ocean or for manning French ships. The 1664 French East India Company received from Jean-Baptiste Colbert a charter that contained the provisions of marriage for French men to women of the country, and for their children to be accepted as French, meaning white, as Cardinal Richelieu had earlier issued for French colonies in Canada and the Caribbean. The royal contract for the 1664 company and a set of additional laws that King Louis XIV and the company jointly issued to interpret and refine them reflected the actual practice of Catholic priests at Fort-Dauphin between 1642 and 1664. A lot of the specific dimensions of the practice at Fort-Dauphin were reflected in a set of additional laws beyond the contract that were to be applied at Fort-Dauphin. But Fort-Dauphin would exist only for another decade, to 1674. But the rules formulated for Fort-Dauphin and based on the marriage practices of priests stationed there came to govern French Empire at Ile de Bourbon and in South Asia for the remaining 40 years of the French East India Company's contract. and into the new French East India Company of the 18th century, essentially the companies of John Law and the offshoot later Compagnie Perpétuelle. The French crown allowed Frenchmen to marry native women in Canada and the Caribbean, but it was in the Indian Ocean that this practice became most widespread, with important consequences, especially for Dauphin and Ile de Bourbon. Let me now switch to beef, which in many ways is surprisingly to me, as I began to do this research, is the crux of the story. This is a theme in which Madagascar was unique in French Empire, I believe, and which helps us to understand what kind of a colony Fort Dauphin was, or what it became. What most struck me in reading through the historical evidence on Fort Dauphin was the frequency with which these documents indicated that cattle came into the possession of the French, cattle from southern Madagascar. So I made a list of the incidences. My list now adds up to more than 154,000 cattle. As I made the list, I felt it significantly understated the number of livestock acquired by the colony and its armed forces, because there weren't indication of numbers on number of arrivals at the colony. My supposition about undercounting was later confirmed when I read in a report submitted to Jean-Baptiste Colbert in 1668 by inspectors sent to Fort Dauphin that nearly 300,000 cattle had been consumed by the French at the colony during the 26 years since its establishment in 1642. So they were working with the archives and the memory of the colonists in reporting. 300,000 cattle. This sizable figure suggests an average annual consumption of 11,500 cattle at Fort Dauphin between 1642 and 1668. The reality is that it's uneven. That's just an annual average. This is a huge number of livestock. In 1637, for example, the city of Paris, with 400,000 residents, consumed 40,000 cattle, or one animal per every 10 inhabitants. In its first 20 years, Fort Dauphin typically comprised fewer than 100 men. After that time, the population expanded rapidly up to as many as 1,500 residents on occasion, but death would quickly reduce the numbers. But after the first 20 years, the number seldom fell below 200 persons. If 200 men obtained 11,500 cattle a year, each man was consuming 57 to 58 cattle each year, versus one-tenth of an animal for the residents of Paris. So the rate of beef consumption at Fort Dauphin was astronomically higher than that of the people of Paris. So the obvious question here is, how could so few persons at Fort Dauphin consume so many cattle? The short answer is they weren't eating them all. But beef consumption was high. Comparisons, I think, are important. So for another comparison, I turn to the East India Company's, the Dutch East India Company's colony at the Cape of Good Hope nearby. There, according to historians Elphick and Malherbe, who are sort of the experts in this period, the Dutch East India Company purchased 16,000 cattle and 37,000 sheep, just below that number in each case, in the half century between 1652 and 1699, or an annual average purchase of about 340 cattle and 779 sheep, okay, versus the 11,500 cattle annually for Fort Dauphin. The Dutch East India Company was infinitely larger and serviced more ships, and there were more mouths to feed at the Cape. So this is a significant element of the colony. The French at Madagascar, with a small population and fewer ships to supply with food consumed cattle at 33 times the rate that the Dutch did at the Cape of Good Hope in the same period. If we include the sheep, the consumption at Faux Dauphin was still 10 times that of the Cape, if you count the sheep as cattle. A key explanation for the divergence between the two European colonies' consumption of cattle lies in how they acquired them, and also what they did with them. While the Dutch traded for cattle, the colonists in Madagascar usually stole them. What we can conclude is that the amount of cattle acquired by Faux Dauphin indicates that cattle lie at the core of a significant and, frankly, heretofore hidden history of violence, hidden in the historiography, not in the documentation, violence, destocking, and colonial beef consumption during the middle decades of the 17th century. Cattle in southeast Madagascar were, in the mid-17th century, an integral part of a mixed agro-pastoral farming system. They were key to the production of rice, the staple starch. Cattle were employed to prepare fields in which the rice seed was sown. Both Malagasy and French at Faux Dauphin recognized that those who did not have cattle would starve for want of rice. Malagasy, the French reported, ate beef only during their celebrations, a principle geared to maintain herd size. There are some exceptions noted in the documentation. So what impact did France's cattle-consuming colony of Faux Dauphin have on southern Madagascar? This is a question which has seldom been examined, really, in existing work. Recall that the contracts for colonization issued by the French Crown typically provided that land and property acquired of native people would become the property of the colonizing company. This detail of colonizing contracts, which many of us know about but sometimes don't focus on, encouraged violence and dispossession overseas by French investors and their employees. That was the purpose. It was the means by which a king in Paris, or Versailles, authorized and entreated his contracted companies to pilfer the land and property of others. That's how colonies were created. At Faux Dauphin, the process of acquisition was begun timidly, but it expanded over time. The first governor of the colony, Jacques de Prony, allied with the ruling authorities of southeast Madagascar by marrying one of their daughters. This was the earliest marriage. This union of alliance, very fitting for a colony that was conceptualized as for trade, was accompanied by a commerce in cattle to begin with. In the first 4 or 5 years after 1642, Faux Dauphin obtained its beef through trade, as the Dutch did at the Cape beginning in 1652. Trade and alliance quickly ran afoul of the French East India Company's employees, however. They were chronically hungry, and their ringleaders, at least, were unhappy that their governor was sharing food with his Malagasy allies, which included his wife's family. So I was concerned that les Noirs or les Sauvages were getting rice, and they could see them leaving the fort with rice of the fort. They put their governor, Prony, in chains in mid-1646. After Prony was released, after about 6 months or so, and a company ship arrived in harbor and was released, Faux Dauphin in 1647 turned to stealing primarily for its cattle, relatively little trade. The colony's second governor, Etienne de Flacourt, who arrived in 1648, rapidly expanded this policy and also sought to destroy the leadership of southern Madagascar. Between 1650 and 1654, Governor de Flacourt sent small parties of Frenchmen with muskets and allied Malagasy to attack towns near Faux Dauphin with the intention of requiring their leaders to recognize French sovereignty and to secure cattle. In a surprise dawn attack on 22 July 1651, de Flacourt's men killed Drian Ramac, recognized as the king of the region, the largest grand of the region. Jayantharamak's riverside town subsequently became, symbolically, the countryside estate or habitation of Fort Dauphin's governors. Flacourt's conflict was about land. French forces then systematically raided and burned the settlements of Anoussi, the district of southeast Madagascar where Fort Dauphin was located. Many of the region's political leaders and much of its population fled across the mountains, as you see here, later filtering back into Anoussi as French marauders were sent across the mountains to destroy them and push them back. Refugees returned to Anoussi in the mid-1650s, to claimed, yet contested, French hegemony. Governor de Flacourt described this process of destruction in a book he published in France in 1658. It has the title Histoire de Madagascar, Histoire de la Grande Île de Madagascar. By these means, he wrote in his preface, and I'm quoting, "In 2 years, more than 50 villages were ransacked and burned. And as they sought that they had no way to cultivate the land in security," he continued, "and that hunger pressed on them, they were forced to live, in order to live undisturbed and enjoy their land and possessions in peace, to come to Fort Dauphin and beg me for peace, and submit themselves under me, by recognizing the King of France as their sovereign lord. And they swore fidelity in my hands and have since paid me the same tribute and performed for me the same corvée labor as they once provided to the late Jayantharamak, their king, as can be read in the remainder of this book." That was the preface, and the book then provides the details. When in mid-August 1663, the first French ships to arrive at the colony in nearly 6 years stumbled into this state of war and famine, they brought the sole native man and woman who appeared on the beach onto the ship. Typically, people would come out to the beach in large numbers, and they were curious why only two people showed on the beach. So they were fetched onto the ship. And I'm quoting here, "Everyone saw how thin and disfigured they were," wrote a priest on board the ship of these Malagasy. "They threw themselves on the deck and began their speech filled with lament. They said that their land was lost, that fire had burned their houses, that all their fathers had been killed, that they had nothing more to eat, given their physical appearance." That was apparently correct. "For several years," I'm continuing the quotation, "the French have waged war against us. All the blacks had fled the land and abandoned them, and they were dying of hunger. Many had already expired." So the description suggests that these were older people who probably had been left behind as time of war. French records document the deaths of tens of thousands of Malagasy at the hands of French armed men and their allies in Anoussi and across southern Madagascar. Again, tens of thousands. Those who were killed are but part of a story of gross violence. For an uncounted number died of starvation or experienced hunger, as just witnessed. By comparison, the violence of Dutch colonists at the Cape came in the 18th century, well after the company was very established. At Fort Dauphin, large-scale violence against people in southern Madagascar occurred while the colony was still very new and also very fragile. The contrived hunger and starvation and the killing of Anoussi's people existed in tandem with, and in part as a result of, a massive transfer of cattle from across southern and central Madagascar onto the farms and into the stomachs of the colony's residents. There were between 50 and 100 such farms or habitations in the 1660s and 1670s on the outskirts of the fort, up to 20 kilometers and more away. French diets at Fort Dauphin also tended to be beef heavy and relied on the skills of butchers from Paris who specialized in transforming live cattle into cuts of meat. Colonists' predilection for commoditized beef was based in significant part on practices then in France, where butchers were an important fixture of early modern cities, especially Paris, and typically served both wealthy and humble, although the wealthy consumed more, far more beef than did the humble. Beef consumption in 17th century Paris was on the rise, over 52 kilograms per person per year on average at mid-century, the time of Fort Dauphin, 52 kilograms. Red meat had become a staple as important as bread by the French Revolution. A meat-centered diet, writes historian Sidney Watts, was viewed as the epitome of good living and a guarantee of good health in France. In Madagascar, company employees aspired to the diets of the well-to-do back home. Desire for beef at Fort Dauphin was also related to the fear of scurvy, familiar to all shipboard travelers to the Indian Ocean. The terrible affliction was understood as a mal de terre, a land sickness, for sufferers were observed to rapidly improve once they got on shore. Yet beef was believed to be especially efficacious in curing this and other ills, a sort of elixir. Belief in the curative and healthy values of beef was supported, of course, by the abundance of cattle in southern Madagascar. And recall, to build French sovereignty and influence, colonizing companies and their employees were enjoined in contracts issued from their king to acquire wealth to acquire the wealth and the land of native people. Cattle and slaves were conveniently among the most important components of movable wealth in 17th century Madagascar. In many ways, then, the French colony quite literally ate its way through southern Madagascar, but there was more than eating. The transfer to and butchering of cattle at Fort Dauphin entailed massive destocking of herds in southern Madagascar. Quote, in just the land of Anoussi, where we are, they have destroyed more than 30,000 livestock, decried Catholic priest Nicolas Etienne of his predecessors shortly after he arrived in the colony in 1663. He was shocked to learn this. Fort Dauphin stripped Anoussi of most of its cattle during the wars of the early and the late 1650s. Both the early and the late 1650s were time of war. They also decapitated the leadership of the region. I guess I'm assuming this, but the effectiveness of the muskets of the French was clearly the factor here. There have been arguments that muskets didn't work well in the 17th and 18th century in Madagascar. If one reads the evidence very clearly, that is definitely not the case here. Muskets were very effective in combat. Shortly after Governor de Flacourt departed Madagascar in 1655, his replacement, acting for the governor of Nantes, the Maréchal de la Meilleraye, rounded up the principal remaining rulers of Anoussi, who to that point had been left alive. These men and their sons and their nephews, so both the current leadership and the future leadership, these included André Panla and André Machecourt, were executed on the beach at Fort Dauphin in mid-January 1656. Other leaders, of course, came in their wake, but this was what happened. Away from Anoussi, most of southern and western Madagascar was semi-arid grassland where large herds of cattle could thrive. It was from areas to the west and northwest of the chain of mountains ringing Fort Dauphin, as you see here, that most cattle derived. Marching stolen cattle, distances of up to 500 kilometers and more, led to gross wastage in herds as animals thinned and died on their forced march. The same was true of slaves, although slaves are very seldom mentioned, they are there. At the same time, French and Malagasy allies on expedition to steal cattle feasted on them, depleting their number very quickly as they returned and marched them back to Fort Dauphin. This could last weeks, but usually months for those longer distances. And when they went to steal cattle with Malagasy allies, a portion of the cattle and slaves resulting from the expedition, typically a third or so, but this was negotiated, were given to those allies. The colonists of Fort-Dauphin joined a game of cattle theft in Madagascar. Cattle theft was not new, taking it, however, to altogether new scales and to new purposes, the destruction of herds and the consumption of cattle, moving those cattle over much greater distances than ever before. And the scale of theft increased over time, as indicated, began trade to begin with, and then slowly escalating. Many expeditions in the late 1650s and 1660s tended to come away with tens of thousands of cattle. When in the late 1660s, Governor Mondevergue attempted to stem the cattle theft so as to create the conditions for trade, he was chastised directly in a letter from King Louis XIV for feeding French colonists by drawing on money put aboard French East India Company vessels that was actually meant for the trade in South Asia. Mondevergue died in the Chateau de Saumur as a result of this. So the angry king wrote to him, "It would have been much better to continue the conduct of those who commanded in this island up to the present, that is to say, to make war against the natives, au naturel, because the colonists have subsisted in this fashion without employing money," end quote. These words of the French ruler encouraging war and plunder in southern Madagascar for the subsistence of his colonists are consistent with the contracts he and his ministers issued to dozens of colonizing companies. French sovereignty and influence was to be expanded by appropriating the land and the property of others. It's basic for such colonies. And there was no accountability, of course, for either the theft or the human deaths. If the colony of Fort-Dauphin had originally been intended as an entrepôt for Asian trade, it was conceived as the Batavia, the French, potential French Batavia of the Indian Ocean, it became instead a precursor to the Dutch colony at the Cape of Good Hope, one in which theft and wastage of cattle on a massive scale was a key theme. Fort-Dauphin's governors, its employees, that were released from their contracts, the Anciens Français, its missionaries who married French men and Malagasy women so they could form farms or habitations, also a system of law that brought the persons and reproductive capacities of native women into the French colonial project, all were responsible in differing ways for this state of things. If governors were interested in feeding their employees and soldiers, the Anciens Français, who had to provide for themselves now, sought wealth and the opportunity to stock their farms by engaging in theft of cattle. Fort-Dauphin was a European settler colony in the making, over which the French East India Company had lost control and much money. The decision was to abandon it. The company in 1669 abandoned the colony to Louis XIV and to Colbert, who sought to send the colonists away. They mostly refused. In late August 1674, it was some 75 Frenchmen on the farms who were killed with some members of their families. In fact, there was an earlier killing of about 55 Frenchmen in very similar circumstances about 10 years earlier that is really buried in the evidence. In any case, probably two French women were among the individuals killed in 1674. I end the story here, but were islands places where colonial theft and dispossession tended to occur on a large scale, or where they could be forgotten? And what role have historians played in the silence about violence and dispossession in southern Madagascar, so openly attested to by French at the time? The historiography of Fort-Dauphin as French colonists of the 18th and 19th century were has been fixed on the killing of 75 French in 1674, and this also remained in the colonial memory for centuries, frankly, and is still there in the Indian Ocean. This was a serendipitous, violent end of a colony that was itself based on violence, a violence that was encouraged, even required by a king in the colonizing contracts he issued. There's much more to the story, but I end there and I thank you.